Greeting and welcome to today's meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Gerald Harris, Chair of the Club's Science and Technology Member-Led Forum, and your host for today. We also welcome our listening audience and invite everyone to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce our program tonight, The Future of Digital Advertising Technology, led by Pete Kim. Pete Kim has been an influential figure in advertising technology. Pete developed Yahoo's current program for dynamic retargeting and led the global business development and strategic initiatives for Google ad tech platforms before founding Mighty Hive, one of the fastest growing buyers of advertising of advanced advertising in the world. Peter earned his undergrad degree in biomedical engineering at the University of California, Berkeley, and his MBA from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. In addition to his professional duties at Mighty Hive, he serves on the board of the Center for Investigative Reporting. Please join me in welcoming Pete Kim.
Sit over here if that's okay. Thank you, Gerald, and thank you to the Commonwealth Club for the opportunity to speak this evening. This is a fun topic for me. It's what I do during the day, and we'll be talking today about the future of advertising technology. My name's Pete Kim. I am the CEO of a company called Mighty Hive. We're based here in San Francisco, and as Gerald mentioned, I've done quite a few things prior to my time, as a startup CEO. At one point, I was an investment banker. I spent time as an engineer. I worked in sales. I've worked in business development. I've pretty much done every job you can think of except for human resources. And I have to say that advertising has been a revelation for me. After bouncing around from industry to industry for many, many years, I got into advertising about 9 years ago after returning from a career in Wall Street. On Wall Street in New York. And advertising to me is just one of those fascinating industries that is always changing and is really so important. And I'm pleased to talk about it with you tonight. Let's see, why isn't this working? So, in terms of the company, Mighty Hive, is a venture-backed startup based in San Francisco. We do software and services in online advertising, and as Gerald mentioned, we are one of the fastest-growing buyers of advanced advertising in the world. We are opening offices on three continents at the moment, New York City, London, and Sydney, Australia, and there are a number of folks from the company here tonight. Thank you guys all for attending and making the room not so empty for this. But actually, for those of you listening, it's a full house. So, and so what I wanted to do, just to kind of, as we talk about online advertising, is really to start with a first, which is, why is exactly advertising important? And first, let's just talk about this. Advertising is the financial foundation of the internet. If you really want to think about it, there are a number of services and information sources that are available for literally nothing today. You know, email, the news, Facebook, all of these things are provided free of charge because of online advertising. And so if you believe that the internet has been a transformative invention and a force for good in the world, then advertising is what has paid for it. Next, it's a critical business function. Advertising generally, not only on the internet but across, you know, all of society, is how companies talk to their customers, right? The most important constituency that they have. And so billions and billions of dollars are spent in advertising every year. And, oh, by the way, this is an election year, and there will be billions of dollars spent in trying to figure out who is going to lead our country. Finally, advertising, and online advertising specifically, has been an engine for massive wealth creation. Google, Facebook, Twitter, the list goes on in terms of the number of companies who have IPO'd, and every single one of those companies that I just mentioned has 99% of their revenues from online advertising. It's an important topic, and that's why I am so excited about it. So, First, what I want to do is to actually take a trip down memory lane, just to kind of give you guys some context and a story that I'll actually bring up again later. About 8 years ago, I was working at Yahoo, and as Gerald mentioned, I led the development of something called dynamic retargeting at Yahoo. And most people won't know the industry term, but I guarantee you that you'll recognize it when I describe it. Dynamic retargeting is something that happens when you go to a website, you take a look at a pair of shoes, you do not buy them, and instead, they follow you around the web for about a month or two. Yes? Okay, yes. So I helped to develop that, and for those of you that were annoyed by that, I humbly apologize. But let's take a look at this video here. Back in the day, everybody knows what it is now, but back in the day, not too many people did. So this is an actual video that is years and years and years old of somebody, of Travelocity, doing a retargeting ad. And so what I would do is I'd get up in front of a group of people and say, hey, somebody call out a random city. And somebody would say Kalamazoo. And somebody would say another city, and it'd be Moscow. And it's the two randomest cities that, you know, anybody could think of. There's no way I could have predicted what these people were saying. And then we'd go and we'd do a flight search for it. $831 on American Airlines, $1,388 on United. We wouldn't buy, but the next ad that you would see would be for Kalamazoo to Moscow. This is the travel equivalent of the shoes following you around the internet. At the time, this was a crazy, like nobody really understood why, how and why this could happen. And so now you understand that this is kind of common. But I think that it's, I bring this story up because it brings up a couple of interesting dynamics that will be play, that I'll bring up again at the end of this talk. But anyway, what happened was, as we were doing this, and this was my first job in online advertising, and I really didn't know anything at that point. And I was assigned to kind of work on this product, and we built it up. And I remember going to my boss, his name was David Kopp, and he said, and I said, hey, David, here is the first performance reports from Travelocity on dynamic retargeting. And so he flipped through the pages a little bit, and he you know, handed the paper back to me and said, rookie, this is all wrong. Right? And I was like, why is that? It's like, because if these numbers are right, you've just found the most profitable advertising execution I've ever seen. And I was like, okay, David, I knew these numbers were high. I didn't know they were that high. But we rechecked these numbers four times, and the client confirms these numbers are correct. And so at that point in time, you know, we knew that we were onto something. As a side note, I probably should have quit my job then and there and started a different company. No less than four companies have IPO'd on the back of that particular tactic. But I didn't. And instead, we kind of continued on at Yahoo and later at Google. But the interesting part about that wasn't that we, and the reason why I bring it up, wasn't to establish my bona fides in advertising, the fact that I've been doing this for a while, but instead to really kind of tell you about what happened next. And like any company, when I was working with Travelocity, I would go to them and, like, you know, if you show them a way to, like, you know, just get tons and tons of profit, then what the natural reaction from them will be, how do we do even more of this? And so in this particular case, what the differentiating part about this advertisement was the fact of how personalized, how specific it was. And so they were saying, they were thought to themselves, well, look, if a little bit of personalization, Kalamazoo to Moscow, goes and, you know, creates stuff like, you know, results like these, what about a lot of personalization? And I was like, okay, what did you have in mind? Well, how about this, Pete? We can do an ad that instead of saying cheap flights from Kalamazoo to Moscow, it could say, hello, Peter Kim. 42.6 seconds ago, you did a flight search from Kalamazoo to Moscow. The cheapest flight was on American Airlines for $831, but we know that you're a United flyer. For $1,388, we can get you the aisle seat with your, you know, your frequent flyer number in there. Don't worry, we already have your credit card. Just click here. And that's the ad. We didn't do that, but not for the reasons that you may suspect. The reasons why, a lot of people would say, well, isn't that really technically challenging to do? Wouldn't that be really hard to write all the engineering code in order to do that? I'll tell you right now, it's trivial. We absolutely could have done that 9 years ago or 8 years ago. We absolutely could do that today. We choose not to. And the reason is not a technical reason, but instead because the purpose of online advertising and any advertising is to entice and to persuade as opposed to scare the living crap out of, right? And so we have held back for years and years and years and years around some of the specificity and the personalization that we absolutely could have done. Okay, so like I said, I bring that story to introduce some points. We'll come back to it later. So here's an overview of the chat that I'm going to give to you today. It's really simple. And that is, the topic is the future of online advertising. But in my opinion, in order for you to really understand where this is going to go, you have to understand where we've been, then we're going to talk about where we're at today, and then you can start to see the pattern emerge between those two points so you yourself can see why I think we're going to end up where we're going to end up in the future, where we're going. I put a couple of notes down at the bottom. One is the intended audience of this talk. I talk about advertising almost for a living, and it's a real treat for me to talk to an audience that is a layman's audience, right? The folks I usually talk to will talk in three-letter acronyms with industry jargon and all that kind of stuff. Today, I'm going to do my best just to explain it in clear and simple English. And if I backslide a little bit, please raise your hands and just say, listen, what was that word you just used? Please explain, and I'd be happy to. And the second thing is just a disclaimer, right? Nothing I say here tonight is set in stone. It's not fact. You cannot sue me. Don't sue him either at the Commonwealth Club, right? And if you trade on this information or anything like that, then, you know, it's on you. Okay, so with that, so let's really quickly just put together a useful framework. I'm a big fan of frameworks because they help you understand what's going on. Whenever you're thinking about advertising, you should just ask yourself four very simple questions. Number one, who are you talking to? Two, what are you saying? Where and when are you talking to them? And how do you assess the results? In advertising, those are, and in many things, those are the only things that matter. Right? We'll dress them up oftentimes by putting $10 words next to them like targeting, creative, media, attribution. But all those things really mean is who are you talking to, etc. As we go through tonight, we will use this framework so that I can explain to you guys what's really happening. Next, let's take a look at a timeline. This is a media and advertising timeline for those of you who are joining by podcast. I'm sorry you won't be able to see this, but basically we're taking a look at some of the major events in media and advertising over the scope of history. And so mass media was really invented in the 1400s, 1440. That's Johannes Gutenberg and his printing press. Does anybody remember what the first thing to come off the printing press was? The Bible, that's right, which if you squint hard enough is an advertisement for, well, never mind. Next was the newspaper in the 1600s. The first magazine came a little bit later, 1663. The radio was invented by Marconi, 1895. There's lots of advertisements on the radio. I actually did know that Marconi invented the radio, but I didn't know who invented the television. The television was invented by a gentleman by the name of Philo T. Farnsworth. And this was cool because I didn't know that. But you know what was also really cool? Philo T. Farnsworth invented the television at 202 Green Street, less than a mile from this very spot, right? And two blocks away from Mighty Hive's new offices at Jackson Square at Pacific and Sansom. And so that blew my mind just in terms of, once again, San Franciscans contributing to the technological developments of the world. So, 1927, Philo T. Farnsworth in the television. Tim Berners-Lee inventing the World Wide Web in 1989. Google, Larry Page, Sergey Brin, 1998. Smartphones, Steve Jobs, 2007. And then we get to today. This is obviously not to scale in terms of like the timeline, and it obviously skips lots and lots of major events, but it gives you a sense of the scope of how long, you know, humanity and our culture has been working on these problems, somewhere around 600 years. And there's been a lot going on, and so I just wanted to kind of give you the broad sweep of what's happening there. So here are the big problems in advertising. It's what I'm going to talk about. But in order to understand what the problems are, we have to understand where we're trying to get to. And I believe that advertising is trying to march towards an ideal. And that ideal is personal conversations, right? The most persuasive thing to me and to most people in this world is just a conversation with a knowledgeable person who listens to what you say and responds in a knowledgeable fashion, right? And then you have a conversation, you have a discussion, and then you make a decision. This is the absolute best that advertising could ever aspire to. And in the pursuit of that, we have four main barriers towards reaching that ideal. In the following slides, what I'll do is I'll talk about each one of these in detail, but here's the overview. The first, the who. Who are you talking to? There's a problem there in granularity of buying. I call this Wanamaker's Dilemma. The second is the what, which is the personalization of the message. We already started talking about this with the Kalamazoo to Moscow stuff, but we'll be talking about something called the curse of vanilla. Number three, the where and the when. It's about message sequencing, and we're going to talk about a fictitious symphony that I call the worst symphony in the world. Fourth is the how, which is the measurement of outcomes, and we'll tell a little parable about the land of the blind. So each of these four are four separate vignettes that I will talk about now, and each of them represent a separate problem that that must be tackled and conquered in order to reach the ideal of truly personalized advertising that works just like a conversation that you'd have with a friend. So John Wanamaker, 1838 to 1922, you probably haven't heard his name before, but you've probably heard his most famous quote, which is, "Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. The trouble is, I don't know which half." Now, Wanamaker himself was actually a titan in a number of fronts, not just advertising, but also in, he was the inventor of the modern department store. Based in Philadelphia, he was advertising quite a bit, and here's what his dilemma or his complaint means. Back in those days, if you were going to advertise a lot, you had to do a lot of it in the newspaper. And so if he bought an ad on the front page of the New York Times, or the Philadelphia Inquirer, or whatever, right, the problem was that many of the people who saw that ad would have absolutely zero interest in going to the store. And yet, he bought the ad and showed it to them. So how many people in this room, even in the last, I don't know, week, have seen an ad for a product or a service that you have absolutely zero chance of purchasing? That should probably be everybody. That is the essence of Wanamaker's complaint, is that people are buying advertising that just doesn't make sense. It's bad for the advertiser because they're wasting money on something that just isn't going to do anything. And frankly, it's bad for the consumers, too, who are irritated by these advertisements that just don't make any sense to them, right? So that is Wanamaker's dilemma. And we're going to have to try and figure out how to take the half of the advertising buy that's wasted and actually make it all go spent on people that want to buy your product, or at least could buy your product. That's number one. Number two is the curse of vanilla. So this is basically, once again, a byproduct of broadcast advertising. So if you're John Wanamaker and you're going to be buying an advertisement on the front page of the New York Times, that ad is going to look the same to every single person who sees it. Right? Similarly, if you're going to buy an advertisement between the first and second quarter and Monday Night Football, that advertisement is going to be identical for every single person that sees it. There's a big problem with that, which is that people are different. And so the ad that might be perfect for my friend Lexi might be very different from the ad that might be perfect for Stephanie or Stephanie. And the interesting thing about that is this is a limitation of the medium itself, right? Because you're broadcasting this message to many, many people, you are limited to saying one single thing to everybody. Now, to illustrate this point and to show you why I call it the curse of vanilla and show you ice cream up there, if I were to do an experiment and ask everybody in this room to list their three favorite flavors of ice cream, right, everybody would have a different list. Some people would say pistachio. Some people would say whatever. But if I had to give everybody in this room the same ice cream, I probably would choose vanilla. Because even though it isn't everybody's favorite ice cream, It is definitely non-controversial. It's the least common denominator. It's the inoffensive or bland, which actually is what vanilla means these days, right? You have a vanilla delivery. You have a vanilla product. It just means inoffensive. It means bland. But that means that we have left some value on the table, because what really would have been perfect in a conversation that I was having with you would be for me to give you the perfect ice cream for you instead of the kind of average best for everybody. That's problem number two, the curse of vanilla. Number three, the worst symphony in the world. That is, we were trying to figure out a good picture for this, and we came up with a conductor who just looks like he's having a bad day. And so what I mean by the worst symphony in the world is the following. The advertising that an advertiser puts forth, right, can be thought of as some sort of musical or, you know, conversation or musical piece that is played not by instruments called the trumpet or the trombone or the piano or the violins or strings, whatever, but instead played by instruments called television and radio and mobile and video and banner ads and whatever. The problem is that today, this is the worst symphony in the world, because each of those instruments is playing independently of one another, right? The television ad has no idea what the radio ad's doing. The radio ad has no idea what anybody else is doing. And so because all of these guys can't hear each other and they're playing independently, they all think it sounds great to them because they can only hear themselves. It's like 15 soloists pretending, playing simultaneously, pretending to be a symphony. And so instead, what we see is that they all think it's great, but we in the audience who are listening to this mess just go, what is this? There is absolutely no coordination between the various media channels today, and that's why I call it the worst symphony in the world. Last one, the land of the blind. Advertising, as I've said before, is a business activity. The purpose of advertising is to find new customers to buy your products. You're supposed to generate revenue from it. Here is something that's very interesting. Advertisers and the entire advertising, generally speaking, still to this day has no idea if this even works. Let me say that again. Right? They really can't tell you if it works or not. Like, generally speaking, we think it's kind of working. Right? But if you ask them a very simple question, I spent $100,000 on this advertisement. How many dollars did I make in return? They'll give you some estimates. They'll give you some guesses. But they really can't pinpoint the exact number of what exactly happened. And any CMO in the country, well, the chief marketing officer in the country will tell you that if he goes to every single one of his advertising partners and says, hey, listen, how much money did you make me? How much money did you make me? And he added up all of those numbers, it would add up to 10 times the amount of revenue that was actually generated. Now, that's a problem, because either the finance department lost 90% of the money, or somebody's wrong or lying or both. That is the land of the blind, because really what's true is that it's very, very difficult to figure out exactly what happened in terms of how much did we know how much we spent, but it's very hard to say what exactly that caused. And that's a problem, because we can't tell if advertisement A is better than advertisement B, is better than advertisement C, and without that true north, without that ability to tell what's good and what's bad, it's very hard to make progress. So, those four things are the problems that we have right now. And three of those four are actually part and parcel, a side effect of broadcast media. And broadcast media, by the way, I'm not going to throw completely under the bus. Broadcast media is an unbelievably powerful thing. The fact that you can take an advertisement and show it to tens or hundreds or even billions of people, right, is an incredibly powerful thing. Nonetheless, because of the very word broadcast, which is broadly casting the same message to everybody, there are limitations. And they are, right, Wanamaker's dilemma, which is that there's a whole bunch of people that get shown this ad that didn't need to see it. The curse of vanilla, which means that I have to say the same thing to everybody. And even the some of the stuff around the measurement. Because you know what? If you ask somebody who watched, give me the exact names of the people who watched Monday Night Football, They can't tell you, right? And so three out of the four of those problems are directly related to the broadcast media paradigm. The other one happens to be, which is the sort of worst symphony in the world, is because today the agencies of the world, there's not just one agency. A modern company has dozens of agencies. And at the very least, they have a television agency and a radio agency and an online agency and a print agency and all these things. And all of those guys are playing different pieces of music and they're not listening to each other. And as a matter of fact, honestly, they don't particularly like each other because they're competing for the marketing dollar of the budgets. Okay, so we now know that what the source of these kind of issues are, and now let's talk about today. Now, remember, I said that we were going to talk about where we were, and we'll talk now about where we are, and then we'll move on to where we're going to be. So today, a fundamental shift in media is happening. It's cross-screen, it's on-demand, it's personalized, it's everywhere. Here, those are the buzzwords from the tech industry. Here's what this really means. 15 years ago, there was not that much on TV, and 50 years ago, if you wanted to watch something, you had three choices, ABC, CBS, and NBC, and that's about it. Today, I can watch my favorite television show at any time I feel like it. I can watch an episode, I can begin an episode on my television, go to sleep, wake up without skipping a beat, get on a bus, go to work, watch 20 more minutes of it on my cell phone, watch 10 more minutes at lunch on my laptop, come back home, and finish the episode on the TV where I started. That's unbelievable. And that is absolutely commonplace today. And it's not just television. It's not just video. You can read anything you want to. You can listen to anything you want to. Right? And that is transformative on any number of fronts. But here's one that's interesting for advertising. And that is that people's expectations of their time with their screens has gone up massively. Every single moment that I spend looking at a screen is now perfectly tailored to me. I get to watch whatever I want, listen to whatever I want, whenever I want. And therefore, the bar with which I judge any content, not just the television show, but also the ads that come through it, right, has gone up massively. Today, according to the polls, people are more negative on advertising than ever. And I claim that part of that is not because we've gotten worse at advertising, but because people's standards have gone up for every moment of media consumption that they have through this. The interesting part is that the technologies that have raised that for everybody else also gives us the ability to solve this problem. So today there's a revolution going on, and when I said that Mighty Hive is one of the fastest growing buyers of advanced advertising in the world, this is the type of advertising that I was talking about. It's called programmatic advertising, and it's very, very different than the broadcast advertising that we've been talking about in the past. Now, I'm not going to belabor this, but I do think it's helpful for you guys to understand the exact mechanisms by which this stuff works. So let's do an example in banner advertising. Pretend that you are sitting at your desk and you open a browser and you type in www.cnn.com and you hit enter. In about 300 milliseconds, the entire page will render. You can read the story and the ads will be there too. There'll be a little box on the side, perhaps some ads at the bottom, right? And the process by which that ad was purchased and caused to show up on your screen is amazing. And I think you guys will agree with me after I explain to you what is happening. During that 300 milliseconds, what will happen is that CNN will forward that impression, that media inventory, to Google or others, where there will be a global auction to bid on the opportunity to buy just that screen space alone. Not hundreds of millions of impressions, one impression. And that impression is purchased for a fraction of a penny in an auction that takes place in a fraction of a second. The whole thing, after the whole auction is done, the winner is, picked for the highest bid, and then that person will be asked for a creative. That creative will be sent to the browser, and then the whole page will load. That whole thing occurs in a process that is about as fast as you can clap your hands together twice, and it happens billions of times an hour. Right? It is the way that media is quickly being bought today. Programmatic advertising is all about granularity. It is about speed. It is about accuracy. And it is a complete paradigm shift from what happened before. Here are a number of ways that it's better. Number one, you can buy ads one at a time, as opposed to buying ads, one front page at a time. You can use data. As a matter of fact, I think I have a slide here. Oh, yes, I do. So programmatic advertising for the four problems that we were talking about actually addresses a lot of things. So for Precision, Wanamaker, for Vanilla, for the Worst Symphony in the World, and for the Land of the Blind, I've given a score for programmatic advertising on a scale of 1 to 5, right, for how good they are at solving those problems. In terms of precision, right, again, this is Wanamaker's problem. I want to advertise to my friend Lexi and nobody else, right? I want only those people that I want. We're now at a 4 out of 5, right? It is possible now, today, to send out ads at a massive scale to only the tailored audiences that you want to and nobody else. 2, personalization. I give that a 3 out of 5. We started off with the Kalamazoo to Moscow. And we can do lots and lots of stuff there. There's a little bit more that we have to do. For example, it's hard to do personalized video these days, right? Because jamming together video assets on a personalized basis is a little bit harder than jamming together a banner ad. But still, there's a lot of progress being made there. But on a scale of 1 to 5, personalization, getting the perfect message to somebody is a 3. Coordination is a 2 right now. It's still really, really disjointed. Your television ads are still very difficult to coordinate with your online buys. People are working on that. For the record, there's something called programmatic television that's now starting to come in. And basically what that means is that you'll be able to buy TV ads in the same auction-based system that I described for banner ads. And that, too, will allow the coordination to increase because simply from the very same program, you'll be able to buy media of all types, removing the disjointedness of the Worst Symphony in the World. Finally, measurement. I still think we're at a 2 right there, right? In a lot of cases, we've gotten very good at measuring cause and effect inside of online transactions, right? With online ads, I know who I'm showing an online ad to, and I can see if they bought something or not. We're making big strides in trying to figure out how to do that, not just with the 10% of transactions that happen online, but the other 90% of transactions that happen in the real world. Programmatic advertising is what's moving forward right now, and we are making real, genuine strides towards that ideal that we had, which is, once again, just real conversations. So, where does this all end up? Here's the way that I wanted to explain this is a story about your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren. The reason why I hedge a little bit here is because I'm not exactly sure how long this is going to take. But please imagine that your grandchildren or your great-grandchildren are hanging out with you one day on a Sunday afternoon, and you guys have just gotten back from the store and purchased whatever is the modern then equivalent of a television. And you have set it up, plugged it in, turned it on, and you gather around to watch. And the first ad an ad shows up. And it is a completely personalized ad, and the kids start going, well, yay, let's go to Disneyland or something like that, and that wasn't an accident. But then one of the grandchildren turns to you and says, is it really true that when you were a kid that we could have bought this television, brought it home, set it up, plugged it in, turned it on, and the first ad that we saw was an ad for the very TV that we just bought from the very place where we just bought it. Is that true? And the answer would be yes, that would have been possible when I was a kid. And they'd be very confused because they'd say to themselves, did they forget in the last 20 minutes that we just bought this thing, right? That they're talking to us through this thing that we just bought from them? Isn't that a little bit, you know, stupid? And through the eyes of a child, you can understand how they would expect this conversation to happen, right? That we just bought it from them. And that of course, the next thing they should say is, not buy the same TV you already bought, but how about buying like a video game system or, you know, some tapes or whatever. And tapes, I just dated myself there. And but the interesting part there is that, you know, the simplicity with which the child is looking at that interaction is belied by the sophistication and the complication, the complexity of achieving what we just described. In order for that to happen, think about all the data that has to fly around, all of the coordination that has to be, you know, flawlessly executed. It's unbelievable. Da Vinci said that the simplicity is the ultimate sophistication, and I think that this is a very good example of just that. And so I do think that we're going to get to a world in which this will happen. I really do. As a matter of fact, most of the pieces are already there. And all we have to do is just get the business processes right in order to achieve them. Now, we have some predictions for the future when this world arrives, and here are a couple of them. Number one is that the ad quality is going to improve, right? We will see fewer bad ads. They will be useful, they will be funny, and they will be tailored specifically to you. Number two, there's just going to be fewer advertisements. As I said, and that I think everybody's going to go, yay, because, yeah, there's too many ads today. But remember, as we approach this longer-term ideal of just personal conversations, nobody likes the guy who won't shut up, right? And so you will have somebody who will have, you know, have advertisers who will say enough to get the point across in a very compelling way, and then they will stop, right? They're not going to barrage you with ads every single day, and that is something that me and my industry really need to work on. I think there's going to be fewer advertising agencies. In the lead up to this, there was, I think it was mentioned that I might be controversial. Hi, advertising world. Yes, that's a controversial statement. I think there are going to be many fewer advertising agencies. And that's not because, you know, there's anything wrong with advertising agencies. I think it's because of a change in the business tempo that has to occur. If you are really going to have a conversation with somebody, then you need to be able to respond quickly, very, very fast. And you need to be able to use data that is only available inside of a company. It's very difficult to respond quickly when you have a team of professionals outside your company who are doing this on your behalf. You must have people and teams that are inside the company that are going to be working on this, that are responding very quickly with full and unfettered access to everything that that company knows in order to simulate a person that can just talk to you. Finally, I do think that there's going to be the folks who build the software that allows this to happen are going to be the heavyweights. I think that that's going to be Facebook. I think it's going to be Google. I think it's going to be AT&T and Verizon and AOL just hooked up. AT&T is thinking about making a bid for Yahoo as we speak. We'll see if that happens or not. And there is, but those folks that are out there are who are going to be putting out these platforms are everyday household names. And I think that they are right now competing for nothing less than the future of advertising, which, by the way, is a $500 billion global market. One other prediction, and that is that these technologies are going to be very, very empowering for the little guys. Historically, advertising has been the province of the mega company, the huge, the gigantic, the global. And that is really, there's many reasons for that, but one of the reasons for that is a side effect of Wanamaker's dilemma. For Wanamaker, 50% of the media was wasted. But if the the owner of a small mom-and-pop hardware store were to buy the front page of the New York Times, it wouldn't be 50% waste. It'd be 99.999% waste. And the ability now to just buy advertising for only those people that you want to is incredibly empowering, not just for the big guys, but for the little guys as well. And that is an amazing story, because that means that there is less barriers to entry, that people can compete freely for customers. And it is one of the things that I am so proud of our industry for doing and for my company for doing, because we specifically focus on those companies that are smaller than most, and we seem to be doing pretty good at while doing it. A couple of comments about the future. This is the part where I'm going to wrap back in the story that I started with on Memory Lane. You guys remember what it was? Kalamazoo to Moscow was performing great, and instead what they wanted to do was say, oh no, let's say, hello Peter Kim, 42.6 seconds ago, etc. At the time, we didn't do it because we thought it would be scary. I emphasize once again that there was nothing technically challenging about that. That was purely a judgment call. At the time, when we said that, when we made that judgment call, it's because we knew the public wasn't ready for that. But I ask you now to relook at that exact same story through the lens of the conversation that we just had. If you believe that the ads are talking to you and the person on the other end knows everything and has been paying attention, is it really so surprising that your travel agent, whether it be Travelocity or anybody else, already knows that you like to fly United, that you like the aisle seat, and that they have your credit card number, which probably hasn't changed since the last time you bought a flight from them? Of course not, right? What I'm trying to do is to illustrate that these changes are going to happen, and that these changes, right, are actually already possible, but that the reason why we haven't done them is because we didn't want to frighten anybody. We didn't want to jar anybody. But they are possible, and if you understand where things are going, then you will understand that as we progress in the next 10, 20, I don't know, it's either grandchildren time or great-grandchildren time, but as we progress, I really want to make sure that you understand something. There really is a difference between new, unexpected, innovative, and frightening, wrong, or yucky. Right? Just because something's new does not mean it's bad. I'm not telling you that anything that's new is automatically good. Right? You can and should take a look at every single thing that comes in and make your own judgment on it. Right? But just because something's new doesn't mean it's bad. Right? In particular, for the advertising, people complain often about how bad advertising is. Well, as we make them better, right? Please understand, right, and give us a little bit of a break as we are moving forward and we say, look, it might be a little bit surprising, but we still think that it's good for everybody involved. So, with that, here's what we talked about today. A, where we've been. B, where we're at today. And C, where we're going. I hope that this has been a good and a good and useful use of your time, and I am I thank you, and I'm open to questions if you have them. If you have questions, please go up to the mic so that the listening.
I'll handle that part, please, Peter.
Okay.
Thank you for extending our thanks to Peter. We would like to remind our listening audience, this is a program of the Commonwealth Club of California. We now open the mic for questions. Please keep your questions short and clear. If you have a question, please line up behind the mic and speak directly into the mic as we are recording. I'm going to take the privilege and ask the first question.
Okay.
When I looked at your timeline there, what I didn't see on there was Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube. I saw a program on KQED some weeks ago called Generation Like. And it was the most frightening thing I've seen because it basically said that advertising is going to be controlled not by big companies, but by individuals who, through their own activities, are exposing their friends or whatever to the kind of things that they like. And so the question I have for you is, how does social networking and advertising now meld together?
Social networking and advertising meld together in the same way that advertising and content has always melded together. Advertising is always about putting a commercial message next to content that the advertising or the consumer audience wants to consume. And so social networking is just a different type of content, in my opinion. It's something that is very, very pervasive, and many people spend, 27 hours a day consuming it, if you believe some of the numbers that are out there. And But I think that the things that are happening there are, number one, with the social media, you'll see a big spike in the amount of time that's spent during there in social media. And number two is the ability to know, because you log in every single moment that you spend inside of Facebook or inside of certain parts of Google, Gmail, et cetera, is a logged in experience. Right, and so you have authenticated with an email address and a password that presumably only you know. And so what that means is that, you're spending a lot of time with this. There's a lot of opportunities to advertise to you. But there's also the opportunity to know who it is that the advertising is going to go to. The fact that I have logged in and said, I am Pete at PeteKim.com, right, means that Wanamaker's dilemma can now be solved, right, because now Google, Facebook and Google know that it's me on that end. And by the way, it's not news to anybody that Pete at Pete Kim exists, right? I mean, that is a matter of public record, and lots of people know that. And so all this really does is it allows them to say, hey, I'm going to target these ads as opposed to spray and pray, right, with the broadcast paradigm. Next question.
So I understand everything you're saying. I think it's going to happen much sooner than you're projecting. But my concerns are two. One is the moral issue of invasion of people's information and what they do, what they're looking at online, who they're talking to online. The other question is that data, who owns it?
It is an awesome question, and it is something that is being wrestled with by some of the smartest minds in the world right now. Right. The best I can tell you is that there are no answers yet. Right. That really is the truth. I have my opinions on them. I will refrain from giving them today. But the honest truth is that it is truly a matter of law that needs to be decided here. Right. There needs to be good and thoughtful laws written around this stuff. I do not believe that they are existing today. I do not believe that the conversations that we're having today have really done justice to the arguments that need to be considered before we make a decision here. I will sound a note of warning, which is that many, many times laws have been written with the best of intentions in mind and have had unintended consequences. When you are messing around with the flow of information, you are messing around with the very lifeblood of economic activity. And so for those people, if there are any lawmakers in the audience who are listening, I exhort you, I implore you to just think about that, right? That the laws that you pass in this regard, right, though intended to protect and intended to shield, right, may do so, but please consider the fact that you may also have unintended consequences to stop commerce, to prevent jobs from being created, and to prevent people from talking to one another. Thank you for that question. It's a good one.
Hi. Thanks for this great talk. So I have two questions. The first question is, I would like to know more about, like, when you said in the future it will be fewer advertising agencies, where I cannot see in the future how companies will be more focusing on a lot of things than focusing on only on their area. And the second question, what's your prediction about the offline advertising? Thank you.
I think that in terms of the shift towards away from agencies, it's pretty clear that it's already happening. Of the sort of trends that you're seeing out there right now, that one is probably one of the ones that's most advanced. The largest advertiser in the world is Procter & Gamble, and they have very publicly started to bring that stuff in, not completely, right, but starting to bring that stuff in for the very reasons that I mentioned. Netflix, right, is one. Kellogg's, I believe, is another one that's often mentioned. Allstate Insurance. There are very, very big corporations out there right now with huge advertising budgets.
Walmart.
Okay. Walmart, apparently. And it's happening. And so I think that that is a, we'll see if that is a trend that continues. I believe it will because I see fundamental reasons why it should happen. Your second question was, I believe, offline advertising, what will happen to it? That's an interesting one, but let me put it this way. I think that offline advertising, in order to compete with online advertising, will either have to adapt, right, to address the very sort of disadvantages that we talked about. Because if I am a marketer and I have the ability to waste 50% or waste 0%, I think it's pretty clear what the business, the right business decision is, right? And so you can see that inside of, let's say, Pandora versus the terrestrial radio stations, right? If Pandora is able to, and Pandora may be a bad choice because there's some structural vagaries inside of the world of music that make it a little bit, but bear with me on this. It's if every moment of Pandora's sort of advertising inventory is more valuable, then therefore they can take that profit and then buy more content with it, right? And it becomes a virtuous circle where it is just a better deal for everybody. You get to get better music, which means you have fewer ads, which means. And so I think that the levers of competition that have always driven, right, the economics and the evolution of our economy will be the key forces that shape that. But I do believe that the offline guys are going to have to adapt, and quickly.
Hi, Pete. This is Rahul. I manage technology buying for Walmart.com.
So apparently Walmart.
So my question is regarding the review generation, as I call it. I recently bought a house in San Francisco. So I was looking, I'll give you an example of what I mean by generation, review generation. So I was looking for a plumber. And my thumb rule was, if anyone was going to advertise to me, I'm not going to buy from them. I'm going to look at reviews and ratings and then select the plumber. So how do you advertise to generation review?
The same way that you advertise to many other generations. And that is that if somebody who is at a place where they are going to be doing active research and looking at the reviews, perhaps reviews today, right, will be on Yelp or on Angie's List or whatever. But, you know, the process of doing reviews inside the consumer world has been the province of consumer reports and other things forever. And so somebody who is that deep in the funnel, who is right on the very cusp of making a purchase, right, you can and should, take a look at those people. But there is much, much benefit to creating the awareness, the branding, and creating the need and the conversation for those types of advertisements. So even if you are completely ignoring the folks who are right there at the very end of the, at the very edge of the funnel, right, I still think, and to me, I think that there is still value in advertising to those who are right there on the cusp. But perhaps for you, because you don't want to see anybody who's advertising, then the personal conversation that the advertising will be with you would be silence. Because that is what is the profit-maximizing play in that particular instance, right? For others who are different from you, right, perhaps we will say something, right? In either case, at the top of the funnel, there's much, much value in creating awareness and branding for the particular products in question. Very good question.
Hi, thank you very much for the talk today. My name is Wen, and I'm a college student working in tech industry. So as you're describing your talk today, you know, the advertising technology is getting, you know, more and more sophisticated, and the consumer's expectation for the content is also becoming higher and higher. So all these factors seem to be creating, you know, more and more work for businesses of all sizes to, like, manage the marketing plans. So my question is, you know, what do you think is a good strategy for businesses to not just manage their marketing plans, but also to master them and to do well in them?
There's this company in San Francisco. It's a hard question, right? And I would say that with so much chaos in the world of advertising right now, it's safe to say that there's more change happening in advertising at this very moment than in almost any other point in history. In that 600-year span that we were talking about, things are just completely up in the air at the moment. What I can say is that I can offer you the fact that I do believe that any progress towards that should be towards that goal of those conversations. And it should also be the progress should be marked by test and learn methodologies, right? I can't tell you right now that I know everything about this stuff, right? I'm confident enough in myself just to admit, yeah, I don't have all the answers. But what I do know is that those people who will be the first to find it will be those who systematically test their assumptions, measure the results, see if it worked or not, and then move on from there. I think this is the last question?
Unless someone else gets in line.
Oh, okay, cool.
Hi, I'm Kat. I do in-house creative for a local nonprofit. I'm interested that we've talked a lot today about or referenced banner advertising a lot, and which sometimes been critiqued both for being kind of limiting creatively and then also sort of actively screened by the audience because of its placement. I'm keen to hear from you about what you see as the future of advertising formats.
Whew, that's a big question. So first, let's acknowledge that specifically in the world of banner ads, the fact that, A, the banner creative have been poor and that the that there have been just far too many ads have led to the general sort of thing that we call banner blindness, right? And that's the instinctive sort of, you know, I'm not going to look at this and just tune it out. And so anything that looks like this here or this kind of square right there is just gone. There is today, you'll see a lot of folks who are starting to embrace something called native advertising, right? Which is, and that's very controversial, and actually there are a lot of different ways to do native advertising. But for those of you, that's like a very good example of native advertising that I think is great is the Facebook newsfeed, right? It's those ads that kind of just show up inside the newsfeed. Other things that I think are not so good are the ones that where you can't tell it's an advertisement, right? And it seems like an impartial news story, but really it's just a plant for somebody trying to shill. But either way, I think that the motion towards native is actually a response towards us screwing up, right? And just bombarding too many people with too many bad ads. And I think that we're going to, as an industry, the advertising industry really kind of has to climb out of that by just doing other things. I think that dynamic creative, right, is going to be part and parcel of it in order to address the curse of vanilla problem. You're an in-house creative. I spent many years talking to creative teams. And here is an exercise that I would do with them often to convince them why dynamic creative was correct. How many hours have you spent sitting around a conference table arguing about creative idea X versus creative idea Y versus creative idea Z, right? Hours and hours and hours. The truth of the matter is, all of you probably had a point because you're all good at your jobs and you all understand different customer segments. The reason why X might have been better than Y, might have been better than Z, is actually the wrong conversation. Which parts of our customer base would like X? Which parts of our customer base would like Y? And which parts of our customer base would like Z? In a world where the curse of vanilla is removed, you don't have to pick one ad anymore. You can just run all of them. And that is one of the things that comes from dynamic advertising, because you don't have to pick anymore. Just run all of them and pick the best one. The data will show you the way.
Please join me in thanking Pete Kim.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. We also like to thank our listening audience, and this meeting of the Commonwealth Club is now adjourned. Thank you.